Blessings, everybody. This is Dale. Thank you so much for joining with me today. We're looking at Psalm 36. This is a great psalm. And it's got a title. The title says, to the choir director, to the choir master, to the chief musician. We've seen that several times. And then it says, of David. And that means it's a psalm of David. And this time it has a little more information. It says, of David, the servant of the Lord. The servant of the Lord. And so don't ever lose sight of that. David considered himself to be a servant of the Lord. We see it within the Psalms. But when you see all that occurred in David's life and all the things he did, you can see how it might be easy to forget that you're actually a servant of the Most High God. Now, that's a rather short psalm. What he talks about here is he speaks of wickedness, which he's done in many of the Psalms up to this point in time, particularly in crying out for protection from those who are wicked. In this case right here, it's not specifically something that's happening in his life, something that's occurring to him that he's crying out, I need help right now in relationship to this situation. But he's just speaking of the nature of wickedness, and he compares it to the nature of God. Listen to what he says in the first verse. I'm reading from the ESV. Transgression speaks to the wicked deep in his heart. There is no fear of God before his eyes. And so the King James and the New American and English Standard all say that transgression speaks in this way, within the heart of the ungodly. The Lexham says this, an oracle. It then has a colon. The wicked has rebellion in the midst of his heart. That's interesting. I wish I knew why they did that. I don't really know. I didn't see anything with just an initial examination of it, why they said an oracle. Though it is an oracle, it's a proclamation. So what is a proclamation? It's just the truth that, hey, this transgression, wickedness, speaks deeply into the heart of the wicked. This rebellion is in the heart of the wicked. What is the source of it? Well, because there is no fear of God before his eyes. There is no fear of God with the wicked. Oh, they may profess to know God. They may profess a fear. They may feign some religious activities. But there's no true fear of God. Verse 2 continues, for he flatters himself in his own eyes that his iniquity cannot be found out and hated. So what's he saying here? He said, the wicked flatters himself, and he's saying, nobody's going to know this. Concerning this discovery of iniquity and the hatred of it, nobody's going to find out. And actually, if there's no fear of God, that which we consider to be iniquity, that which we consider to be sin, they don't even acknowledge it to be sin. They eventually get to the point where they don't even consider it to be wrong. And the only reason that it crosses their mind that it's wrong is because of the reaction of the rest of mankind who says, no, it's wrong to do that, whatever it may be, the sin or the iniquity. And so the wicked, they flatter themselves, and they do so in their own eyes, that this iniquity cannot be found out, that nobody's going to know, and nobody's going to hate it. Verse 3, there's more. The words of his mouth are trouble and deceit. He has ceased to act wisely and do good. This is what the wicked do. The words of his mouth are wickedness. They're trouble. They're deceit. And he has ceased. He has stopped from acting wisely, and he stopped from doing any good. Well, to what degree? Verse 4 tells us. He plots trouble while on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not reject evil. And so the wicked get to the point to where they don't reject evil, they don't good, they don't abhor it, and they literally plot more evil, plan more sin. King James, devise mischief up on his bed, have plans for wickedness up on their bed. When they're laying there at night seeking to go to sleep, what are they doing? They're planning more sin. This is what the wicked does. This is the pattern and practice and behavior of their life. Verse 5. Your steadfast love, O Lord, extends to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. So you see what David's doing here. He's showing what the wicked are, how they act, how they behave. And then he's setting it in opposition to the Most High God. Your loyal love, your loyal loving kindness, it extends into the heavens. Your faithfulness into the clouds. In other words, it is so high that it's beyond anything we can grasp and understand. Verse 6, your righteousness is like the mountains of God. Your judgments are like the great deep. Man and beast, you save, O Lord. So he's using the very creation that you can look out your window to see, the very creation that all mankind experiences, to tap into the attributes of God's love and his righteousness. His love stretches beyond the heavens that we see. His righteousness is firm and is solid and is stable as a mountain. The mountains of God is like the greatest mountain of all, right? Your judgments are like the great deep. In other words, they're bottomless. There's no bottom and limit to the righteous judgment of God. And it is God who saves man and beast. Verse 7, how precious is your steadfast love, O God. The children of mankind take refuge in the shadow of your wing. So he's talking about the loyal love, the steadfast love that God has, and how mankind and their children take refuge there. Verse 8, they feast on the abundance of your house, and you give them drink from the river of your delight. Again, pictures from the very creation of God into the nature of God himself. That mankind feast upon his house, upon his creation, and that we drink from the river of his delight. Verse 9, for with you is the fountain of life. In your light do we see light. Oh, you want to know what the fountain of life is? It's the Most High God. You want to know what true light is? It's the Most High God. It's in his light that we see light. So the psalmist says this in verse 10, oh, continue your steadfast love to those who know you, and your righteous to the upright of heart. So he's saying, God, those that know you, those that are righteous, those that love you and have turned to you, continue your loyal love, your loving kindness, your steadfast love to us. Don't let it stop, God. Then the last two verses, verses 11 and 12. Let not the foot of arrogance come upon me, nor the hand of the wicked drive me away. Well, that's great right there. So he's saying, hey, don't let the wicked come and drive me away from you, but also don't let arrogance come upon me. The foot of arrogance, the foot of pride. Don't let pride get its foot in the door of my life. That's really easy to happen, right? What happens then? Verse 12. There the evildoers lie fallen. They are thrust down, unable to rise. So what was the initial source of all that we saw of the wicked right here and the things they did? What got them started? The foot of arrogance. The foot of pride. Remember what it said? They have no fear of God. That's how the enemy actually came against Eve at the beginning. They said, remember when he said, oh, did God really say this? To draw into question the nature and the character and what God had actually said of God. Don't let that foot of arrogance, Lord, come upon us. Keep the hand of wickedness away from it, because by that, evildoers lie fallen. Psalm 36, a great psalm. Well, again, I'm Dale. Thank you for your time. I'll see you in the next episode. Goodbye.